Welcome to the Sports Law Biz Podcast, dedicated to helping people better understand the law and business of sports. I'm your host, Peter Ott, and we've got a lot to talk about here today, so why don't we just jump in? Hello, this is Peter Ott with the Sports Law Biz Podcast. I'm here today with Nancy Hogshead Makar, a woman of many talents and abilities. She is the founder and CEO of Champion Women, an advocacy organization for girls and women in sports. And she is also an Olympic swimmer and has won 3 gold medals and 1 silver medal at the Los Angeles Olympics in 1984. She has a long history of advocating for women and girls in sports in addition to everything else that she has going on. And as you'll here later on, it's a lot that she does, so it's too much to summarize here, but it's great to have you here with me today, Nancy.
Thank you for inviting me, Peter. I'm looking forward to this.
Let's get started then. I gave an introduction, but could you let us know anything else that you want to talk about your background so we can better get to know you?
Sure. I guess I got started with the issue of women in sports back even before I had retired from swimming. Donna DeVerona came and talked to the Olympic team and said, "Hey, you're about to become famous. What are you going to do? What are you going to do with it?" And of course, I heard that first part, "Yay, fame!" But then I was like, "What?" But I had never really thought about that. Like, what? I had never really thought that it was something I could do something with, and she hoped it had to do with Title IX, which was the federal law that said you had to give equal educational opportunities to girls and women, and that included athletics. So I kind of got started then, and at the Olympics I knew just enough about Title IX that I could talk about it to the media, and really haven't stopped since then. I worked at the Women's Sports Foundation for 30 years and just started Champion Women about 2.5 years ago.
Okay. I guess one question that I have just off the bat that I'm just thinking right now is, throughout your career, you've been dedicated to helping women in sports particularly. Is there a particular reason for that, just because of your own experience, I guess, as an athlete, rather than more generally? I guess these things tie in more generally to women broadly, but I just want to kind of see what your thinking is about women in sports in particular.
Well, a couple reasons. One is I knew that I was a very lucky recipient of Title IX, that if I had just been 2 years older and with my same credentials, world champion and American record holder, et cetera, that I would not have had a college scholarship opportunity. So because of just a timing, and because a lot of people put the vast majority of their professional lives into assuring that people like me got to have sports opportunities, got to participate in college, I did get to go on and swim for 4 more years and get to go to the 1984 Olympics. I made the 1980 Olympics, but you might remember we boycotted because the Soviet Union invaded Afghanistan.
All right.
Yeah. So anyway, part of it was just like pure, simple give back. But also, I was very aware that being a woman and being an athlete, that I was breaking gender norms. And I call it the gender police were out in force all the time telling me that I was too muscular, I was too ambitious, I was too accomplished, that my accomplishments were going to scare other people away, that this was, you know, messages that boys virtually never heard. And I wanted to change that for women. I wanted sports participation. I got so much out of my sports career. I got not just any wins or losses, but I learned about life. You know, I when you have your 10,000 hours at anything, there's a feeling of beauty and grace and oneness with God and a sense of mastery and competence that I don't know that I could have gotten anyplace else. And I wanted to make sure that women, that the fact that a person is female didn't keep them from being able to have those amazing experiences.
Okay. Well, yeah, no, I think that's great. I think that's what draws me to sports as well. I'm certainly not an athlete on the level of you or anything, but in my own life as you know, just playing sports recreationally and things, I see a lot of benefits for me personally, and obviously it can be a tool for a lot of people to learn skills and to get other benefits, whether it's a scholarship or just life training. So
we've known for a long time that athletes did better in school than kids that did not play sports, right? But it's almost impossible to prove causation, because it could be that those kids were from such families or whatnot that they actually would have done better had it not been for athletics, that they hadn't been spending so much time in athletics. And it turns out this woman, Betsy Stevenson, with I think she's with now, she's at University of Chicago, she proved causation. So she was able to take Title IX and show that, and I won't get into the details because I don't want to bore everybody here, but bottom line is she was able to show that sports isn't just associated with doing better in school, it actually causes it. It's not just associated with being more likely to go to college, it actually causes it. That it causes more full-time employment, and 20% of the workforce today can be directly attributable to Title IX. 20% of the women who are in the workforce full-time can be attributed to this statute. So really the dividends pay off for everybody to have a healthy society, to have a productive, a well-educated society. So you don't have to win medals. You don't have to, like you, Peter, get a law degree to get great things out of sports, that truly there's something there for everyone.
Okay, well, yeah, no, thanks for that perspective. Why don't we move on, I guess, and talk about what you're working on currently. Sure. As I stated in the introduction, you're working on a lot, so can you give us kind of a brief summary of the kind of work that you do?
Sure. Well, let me just give you an overarching, and then I'll talk about specific projects. So the big picture is I'm a lawyer, civil rights lawyer, and how can I use champion women in order to get change to scale? So I could just do individual cases, and I do still do some individual cases, and finish out the rest of my career being an attorney and representing clients and making sure girls had opportunities in sports. But the law's really clear, and usually the facts are really clear when it comes to athletics. So how do you change right now it's a 1.3 million kid gap between girls and boys in the high school level, and it's many, many tens of thousands at the college level. So how do you get that kind of change, right? How do you, rather than just, you know, sort of a whack-a-mole approach? And so that's what we try to do. So it's a basic Title IX compliance, meaning, you know, equal participation and scholarships, and that they get treated the same way. But it's also pregnancy discrimination and employment discrimination and sexual harassment, sexual abuse, sexual assault. It's sort of that the interface between sexism and sport. It's where the impediments to women fully participating in this multi-billion-dollar industry and life setup, wherever there's an impediment, that's what Champion Women wants to do. One of the projects that we're working on right now is we're trying to get Senate Bill 534 passed. This is Senator Dianne Feinstein's legislation, but it's also sponsored by Senator Grassley, who they're both the minority and majority leaders of the Judiciary Committee. All right, so what Senate Bill 534 does is it provides that the Olympic Committee has a duty of care that extends to the athlete, right? So everybody remembers from their torts first year class, those no duty rules. What the Olympic Committee and national governing bodies, which would be United States Swimming, United States Track and Field, United States Diving, all those, there's 47 of those, they're called national governing bodies. What their legal position has been is that we don't owe a legal duty that extends to this kid. So even if we know about abuse that's happening, we know about a coach that's going around the country, just a flat out pedophile, it's not our job. It's the parents' job. It's the club owner's job. You know, it's the police's job. It's just not our job. And so this statute would clarify that there's nothing in, I don't know if people are aware of this, but the Olympic movement is actually covered by a statute called the Ted Stevens Olympic and Amateur Sports Act. So this clarifies that there's nothing in that statute that prevents a national governing body from keeping pedophiles and keeping molesters away from kids. I mean, it sounds silly that you would even have to say that. Right. The bill does a couple more things, but that's the really the big one, the major one out there.
Okay, and I guess that's a focus right now just because of that's an issue, that athletes are getting, you know, exploited, taken advantage of, and there's no, I guess, clear duty that these organizations owe.
Correct. So every 2 years, it's a different sport that comes up, whether it's speed skating or a couple years ago, it was United States Swimming, and before then, or just recently, it's been gymnastics with Dr. Larry Nassar. But right, but you keep having this issue come up over and over and over again, and where kids are getting abused in sports. Now, if a kid is getting abused as part of a school program, they have Title IX. So the school has to predict and prevent, and they've got to, you know, usually a coach will have a teaching credential. They can lose their teaching credential. It can get put on their record. It's not a perfect system, but imagine that kid walks across the street, and when it comes to that club coach there's nothing. And that's not a small number of kids out there. That's 8 million kids. That if people knew how unprotected they were, I mean, Peter, I don't know what sport that you played, but I would bet that if you did play a club sport, I bet everybody out there who did play a club sport, in addition to not having any overall legal protection, and there's none of those people are mandatory reporters, in addition to that, you probably signed a waiver away.
Uh-huh.
That released them from liability unless there was gross negligence or something like that. So if they're just, you know, just your run-of-the-mill negligence on not overseeing this coach very well, then there's not even going to be legal liability for the coach. And then just to put the nail in the coffin, the way that a lot of national governing bodies structure their insurance, so a club has to buy its insurance from the national governing body, right? It pools the risk with all the different clubs from around the country. And they had United States Swimming, for example, for years, it had a wasting policy. It was about $200,000. A wasting policy means that the defense fees come off the top. So if all the club or all the defense attorney has to do is sort of keep the kid at bay, shall we say, or keep the plaintiff's lawyer at bay until the money's gone, and then the plaintiff's lawyers kind of figure out pretty quickly, there's really no way I can get any relief here for my client. I can't even sue the club because the insurance is so bad, that the normal mechanisms of how making it very costly to not oversee kids, the normal mechanisms don't apply. And you have very dangerous environments for kids that are in youth sports.
Wow. I mean, this is something I think people just don't even think about. I was completely unaware of this before reaching out to you. I'm glad somebody's thinking of this. And it sounds like this has bipartisan support, and you're expecting it to move forward.
We're doing everything we can for it to move forward. I mean, you know, it is in the Judiciary Committee, and they were a little focused there for a while on getting a Supreme Court nominee through. So,
right.
So you know, it's just, can we get enough attention? Can we stay on their radar? We've gotten some excellent media from the Indianapolis Star to Washington Post. So we're really hoping that with the media focus that will help us to keep the pressure on to get this statute passed.
Well, yeah, no, thanks for that update. What else are you focusing on right now?
Well, at the same time that this is happening, so about, 3 or 4 years ago, Chuck Wilgus is head of United States Swimming. And Chuck Wilgus was supposed to be inducted into the International Swimming Hall of Fame. And he wasn't a swimmer, but I represented 19 victims of sexual abuse to say that this guy should not be in the Hall of Fame because he did such a terrible job, and he did a bad job publicly, meaning he was on national television and said, I don't owe these kids who are abused an apology. He has gone on to apologize, but anyway, I represented 19 victims. We had about 30 other people who signed on to this effort to try to get Chuck Wilgus out of the Hall of Fame, and we were successful. It only took about 5 days, and he withdrew his name from the Hall of Fame and because of his inability to deal with this issue. So one of the things that we're trying to do is trying to get, he's still in that position, and we need to get him out of the sport. Steve Penny, who has been the head of United States Gymnastics, has recently resigned under pressure from the Olympic Committee because of his very poor job of dealing with the same issue. And so we think the same thing should happen with United States Swimming. And we think that the message that this will send out to other heads of national governing bodies, that their careers, that their legacy, that how they want to be remembered will be forever tainted if they don't take if they need to look at more than just money and medals.
Right. So it's about the message there, that not having proper supervision or punishment for these people, you know, it's kind of like an old boys club. Oh, you know, that's just how it is, you know, and you're trying to change the attitude there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think, you know, listen, it takes a village, and there's been some really good research on what sexual abuse means for a person for the rest of their lives. I was not abused by my coach, but my coach was on the banned, is on the banned list forever. And his name is Mitch Ivey, and he was very famous for abusing his swimmers. So I think a lot of times people thought this was just sexual experimentation, or this was blah, blah, blah. But we know that this is traumatic, that it affects people really profoundly, and that it is a serious harm that needs to be treated every bit as if a child is being tortured.
Yeah. You know, I think hopefully people are becoming more aware of these things, because I'm going to be honest, a couple years ago, I didn't realize the scope of sexual abuse, of harassment that was going around and in the world. And to me, you hear all these stories, you know, Bill O'Reilly, all this stuff, and you just think, that's unbelievable. How could it happen over and over again? And, you know, to people like me, it's unbelievable, because it just seems like that's crazy. But to people that experience it over and over again, obviously it's very believable, and it's got to be terrible feeling like there's nobody you can turn to. So, I mean,
yeah. And I think something that you sort of mentioned Bill O'Reilly and Roger Ailes and, you know, others. I think that rather than say being shocked, and it's so uncomfortable to talk about sexual abuse, I mean, people just want to crawl out of their skin. If I post something on Facebook that has to do with sexual abuse, immediately the response will be kill him, number two, castrate him, and number three, put him in prison for the rest of his life.
Right.
And none of those are going to happen. And it keeps the brain from having to actually think about it, because it's such a reaction of like, ah, right? We just sort of this primal scream. And we got to move out of the primal scream and actually think about how do you prevent it. And one of the ways that you prevent it is you predict it. And both Roger Ailes and others are, you know, when you look at what is the environment that's necessary to create sexual abuse, you have to have a differential in power. Mm-hmm. And you have to have a lack of consequences for abuse. So, right, so we saw it in the, and frankly, it's men typically in all male groups. So if women do not have any power in the system, and if they're not a part of the decision-making process in the system, you are going to have a lot more sexual abuse. So it's the military. It's sports where there's men in all male groups. It's fraternities. It is these in Ivy Leagues, it's the finals clubs. I'm reading this book right now on hockey. So if you know that's where you're likely, where you're, the harm is likely to come from, then that's where you focus your preventative efforts on. That's where you tell kids what's appropriate and what's not appropriate for how a coach-athlete relationship should go. A good coach, an ethical coach, will never text a kid individually. A good coach, an ethical coach, will never try to segment a kid away from others.
Okay. So yeah, that's kind of an awareness raising thing on, because I mean, there's so much you can do as far as reaching out to, you know, the government, asking to get legislation passed and things like that, and you know, lawsuits, there's a place for that as well. But yeah, a lot of this, I mean, like a kid that's starting sports in high school, you know, maybe from a lower income family or something, maybe without parents, I just think, yeah, we need to get some way to help people be aware of the things that they can do to be protected and safe.
Correct. Yeah. So one of the things that we have been able to do is get an entity called Safe Sport started, right? So if you know what about all the power dynamics, Safe Sport is funded by the Olympic Committee and other sponsors, that is separate from the Olympic Committee. It's independent from the Olympic Committee, that does the investigations and is the entity that's responsible for kicking the bad guy out. So national governing bodies typically don't want to do this. These are their buddies. It's their friends. So they had to, it's kind of like USADA, the United States Anti-Doping Agency. They had to segment that out. It used to be that when national governing bodies were responsible for drug testing, there was about 4 positive drug tests a year. After USADA is created, it's about 44 positive drug tests a year. So night and day difference between what an independence gets you and what separate competence gets you. So anyway, so hopefully this will be an internal mechanism, not a lawsuit mechanism, but a place that athletes can report sexual abuse and are actually a place where they can report any kind of abuse, verbal abuse, physical abuse, et cetera, and somewhere within the Olympic Committee and get some remedy.
Okay, yeah, no, that sounds great. Obviously, you know, building up a system that removes some of these obstacles is very important. So yeah, that organization, SafeSport, is very important.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so as we're kind of getting close to the end here, I don't know if there's anything else in particular that you want to talk about as far as what you see as the big issue facing women and girls in sports that you want to talk about.
Yeah, I talked at the beginning about we're trying to get change to scale. So given that there are two things that one argues about in front of a judge, which is, number one, what are the facts? Was the light red or green? And two is, what's the law? When it comes to athletics cases, there's usually not much to argue about, meaning the facts, you know, how many opportunities are being provided for men, how many are being provided for women, and what do their facilities look like? What do their locker rooms look like? What quality coaching are they being provided? What medical care? How do they travel to teams? Those are all pretty factual issues that the parties can stipulate to. So what Champion Women is doing is we're about two-thirds of the way through. We're writing letters to the top schools that are out of compliance with Title IX. All of these schools need to add at least between 150 to 250 women to their athletic department. So these are schools that are really out of compliance, and they're usually the big schools, the large state schools with relatively, as compared with their population of the student body, small athletic departments. So we're trying to find who within that school has the political capital and is willing to expend that capital to advocate for girls in sports. So you don't have to bring a lawsuit, right? I mean, if you know what the facts are and you know what the law is, you should be able to, you know, get some consensus within the school as to what needs to happen and be able to make these kind of changes. But, you know, until people are willing to step out and do that, we've had some really good luck. We've gotten a lot of teams started with this project. But I'm always looking for research assistants to help with these projects. And if you wanted to contact me, we need about three research assistants. We're usually pretty good about being able to get students course credit. It's better if you're here, but if you can work remotely, that works as well.
And here being?
I'm sorry, Jacksonville, Florida. But, you know, we've worked very successfully remotely as well, but there's always just this abundance of work that needs to be done, and it's really fun stuff. I think if I don't have a research assistant sitting next to me as I typically do, they would say that they enjoy it and get a lot out of it, and they get a recommendation letter from me at the end.
Yeah, no, and if I'd known about something like this in law school, I would have been very interested in participating. I think it's. The subject matter is interesting and important, and yeah, it's, you know, I think it sounds like a very interesting opportunity for people. So, okay, well, I think that about takes us to the end. I don't know if there's anything else you want to say before we wrap it up.
I don't think so, Peter. Thank you for this opportunity.
Okay, well, yeah, it's been great to have you on. I've found this conversation to be very interesting, and I have a lot more questions about Title IX and other things. So. Well, maybe we'll have to do that again sometime in the future.
All right. There's always something right around the corner when it comes to women in sports.
Okay. Well, yeah. All right. Thanks for being on the Sports Law Biz podcast.
Thank you, Peter.
This has been an episode of the Sports Law Biz podcast. This podcast is available through the Sports Law Biz website or through iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and YouTube. Before wrapping things up, I'd like to thank some people. First of all, I'd like to thank my friend, Lieb Montoya, for designing the Sports Law Biz podcast logo, as well as the Sports Law Biz blog logo. His artistic ability certainly surpasses mine. If interested, you can check out more of Lieb's work on Instagram and Twitter. His handle is @LiebMontoya in both places. That's @LIBMontoya. Additionally, I'd like to thank a musical artist for providing this theme music that you're listening to right now. The artist is a band called The Losers. The album is entitled Young, Tough, Terrible. The track is sports with an exclamation point. The label is Needle Drop Co. This music is available through a Creative Commons license of Attribution Non-Commercial 3.0 Unported. This podcast was produced and recorded by myself, Peter Ott, and you can reach me at my personal Twitter handle, at PeterJOTT, through the Sports Law Biz Twitter handle, at SportsLawBiz, or through email at sportslawbizblog@gmail.com. Any feedback is greatly appreciated. If you are interested in contributing to either the Sports Law Biz blog or podcast, definitely reach out to me. I love to talk to people about these issues, and I know I can use all the help I can get. Finally, I'd like to thank you for listening to this podcast. Hopefully it was enjoyable. If so, please spread the word and let your friends and colleagues know about it. Leave a review on iTunes. Any way you can spread the news about this podcast would be greatly appreciated. That's our episode today. Tune in next time to learn more about the law and business of sports. I'm looking forward to discussing it with you on the Sports Law Biz podcast.